Hey there, this is David. Welcome to Wonderful World. Thanks so much for being a part of Wonderful World, and not just the Wonderful World podcast, but being a part of this wonderful world. And I'm really glad that we get to spend a little time together, wherever you may be today and whatever you may be doing. If you hear a little rain in the background, it is pouring down rain right now and here in Southeast Georgia, and just one of those, I guess, summer storms that comes along and we get over and over again. Of course, we're about to move into fall, but it doesn't feel much like it. It's still very hot and steamy outside, and I know this rain will just make it feel steamier, but it's still a wonderful world, and glad we have the rain and everything else that is going on. If you haven't noticed, we are in the middle of a political season, and today I want to talk about politics, but I don't want to talk about it in the way that you're going to hear it on CNN or Fox News or whatever your favorite or least favorite outlet of news is. Once again, we talk about everything from the practical and the theological. So that's what I want to do today, is to talk about it from there. Before I get into that, go to patreon.com/life180, and would love for you to be a part of what we do here, and you can support the show and support the work that we're doing through there for as little as $5 a month, and we'd love to have you be a part of that. So there is the commercial. Politics. So when we talk about politics, I want to say this right up front. What we have to learn to do is to differentiate between politics and the whole conversation of politics, and differentiate between that and politicians and parties. And you say, well, David, those things are right there together. And I agree, but we have made everything about the politician and everything about the party instead of the principles of politics that dictate how a government runs and how a government sees things. So politics has become this ugly word, which necessarily shouldn't be, when what we should be doing is saying, okay, how do those politics and those principles behind the politics affect everyday lives? So usually when you say politics now, you automatically think of president, you automatically think of a party, you automatically think of a senator. We put some person or some party in that position, when the reality is that politics affects people's lives and how they live and how they function and how they go about every day. So I want to share this with you. I do have an article, but I'm not going to refer to it as much. It's very interesting, though. This article is from October 2012. This would have been during the political campaigns for the second term of President Obama. And then, 2012, that would have been Mitt Romney on the Republican side. And so this is way before that. But it's interesting to me how some of these principles, and that's why I actually wanted to use this, because the principles still apply. And I'm not going to refer to it too much. I will just a couple different times. There were some principles. And the whole reason I got it, because it started off with Stephen Colbert. He was a guest on NPR's Fresh Air program, and he was promoting his new book called America Again. And listen to the title of this. Listen to the title of this, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't. Wow. I mean, when you move into that, and then 2016, what was the whole campaign for President Trump? Make America Great Again. And now I think in 2020, I'll be honest, I don't keep up with it too much anymore. I kind of shut it down. What is it? Keeping America Great. But his becoming the greatness we never weren't. So I think that's pretty interesting. And in it, giving from the article, it says Colbert, and by the way, the article is called The Christian Calling to Citizenship by Jennifer Marshall. Colbert professed perplexity that evangelical Christians have to base all their political decisions on absolute biblical truths that must not be denied. So political decisions have to be based, he was perplexed that political decisions have to be based on absolute biblical truths. in what he said, a political arena where such truths are often denied. Now, he's not wrong. They are often denied, and we have seen that even in the last, in my opinion, the last 4 years, where we've denied some things, and we've said some things that we once thought were true are no longer true, but there becomes this confusion, as the article says, on how to apply biblical principles to politics in a pluralistic culture. So I want to start off with a question, and I would really like you to think this question through. Obviously, you can't answer me just there, but you can obviously feedback with me through comments and stuff. I would love to hear from you. But here's the question. Do the political positions you hold have a biblical foundation? Do the political positions that you hold have a biblical foundation? And before you immediately say yes, okay, I would love for you to go through all your political positions and then find a biblical basis for that position. Now, I know that Scripture is not going to say do this and practice this certain thing, but what is the principle behind that? And if I can give you, for instance, without getting into the weeds too much and shutting some of you down automatically, I remember in 1996, I was 96, 97, in during the President Clinton era. And I remember the moral majority and the moral opinion that that a president must be moral above everything else, and that if he is an immoral individual and he has an immoral background, then we don't need to have that. And we base that on biblical positions. But then, let's just be honest, some things came out about President Trump during the campaign of 2016, and a lot of evangelical Christians said, I'm not trying to elect a pastor, I'm electing a president. And I don't disagree with you on that, if that's your position, but understand something. What changed in 20 years that we took a moral position in a what we called a biblical position on those things? And I would say this to you. The reason I ask you, do the political positions you hold have a biblical foundation? Because if they have a foundation, the foundation can't be moved. The foundation should not be shaken. Because Scripture, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? If we're removing foundations and deciding what foundations are right for what candidates, we have a huge problem. And so we need to decide, what are our political positions? And do those political positions have a biblical foundation? Now, maybe we're doing it actually backwards. We actually need to have a biblical foundation and then allow our political positions to fit on that foundation. Because you would never do it the opposite. You would never build a building and then decide what foundation you're going to have. You would put the foundation in first. So we need to understand what our biblical principles are and what our biblical foundations are, and then build our political positions based on that. And then we do that, it changes things and it helps us. So, I'm just going to give you a few statements today. Really two major statements. But I believe that these two major statements will help shape this. So, the first statement is this. You have a moral and political responsibility in how you vote and what you promote. You have a moral and political responsibility in how you vote and what you promote. Now, this is predicated on everything being on a biblical foundation. So we use a word called stewardship. And being a steward is to be able to take care of what you have been given. Understanding that what you have been given doesn't belong to you, it belongs to a higher authority. So as a Christian, I believe everything that I've been given, whether it be my health, my life, my family, my job, my ministry, you name it. Everything that I've been given actually belongs to God. And therefore, because it belongs to God, I am a steward of all of that. So I am taking care of it for Him, if you can imagine it that way. And so with that, I have a moral and a political responsibility in how I vote and what I promote. Understanding that how I vote and what I promote is not just going to let people see who I am, but let people see who God is. who God is through me, who God is through my decisions, how God is through the way I interact with people. And the one thing that I have noticed, even among Christians, is the lack of civility with how we treat people we disagree with. We have found it to be very convenient and very even funny to tear someone down, to laugh, to deride, to just literally rip apart someone else for their, whether it be character, and really we haven't even gone to character. We say it's based on character, but, you know, we want to make someone look bad. We want to make a joke about someone. And I've been guilty of the same thing because it's like softball stuff sometimes. It's so easy to do. We love to put up the meme of the person we disagree with that makes them look really bad and makes them look ridiculous. And instead of dealing with things based on principle, we want to deal with things to tear down. And therefore, we're promoting an agenda of tearing down instead of building up. And I never read in Scripture where we're given the responsibility to tear people down, but I read over and over again where we were given the responsibility to build up. You are always going to have people you disagree with. And that's why I tried to get to, from the outset, to say, let's differentiate between what we're talking about, politics and politicians and parties, because you're always going to disagree with politicians. You're always going to disagree with parties. You're going to have fundamental disagreements with people. But that doesn't mean you now have the right to tear down and humiliate and make that person look ridiculous, thinking that if you tear them down, it will lift you up. That's not the way things work. And it's never worked in the history of people trying it. So you have a moral responsibility. Every decision I make, everything that I post, everything that I say about politics, every vote that I make, all of those things, I am answerable to God for that. And when I understand that I'm answerable to God and I am accountable to Him as a steward of what I have been given, I have a particular responsibility that is strictly important and very important because I'm answering to God for that. We get this idea that God just kind of looks down at our politics and laughs, but I believe there is a mourning that goes on as well. And we need to recognize our moral responsibility to God, and then our moral responsibility to fellow man, and I'll deal with that more in the second point, but our moral responsibility to fellow man as well. And so I need to be a good steward on what I have been given. And the most of the times, and I'm like many of you, a lot of things that happen in politics, especially around a presidential election, it just becomes dirty and very nasty. I said to someone last night, talking about a certain event that just happened in politics, I said, I really believe at this point, although we are, less than 2 months away, but about 2 months away from our election, I don't believe you're going to change anybody's mind at this point. It would take something incredibly dramatic. We are so entrenched on our side that it's not going to change anybody's mind. But we're going to mudsling and we're going to tear down. And we're not just letting the candidates do that. We are actively participating in it because, oh joy, now we have social media to do it. Used to, we had to do it just at the water cooler at work. Now we get to do it all the time and with a whole different group of people. We get to argue incessantly. And so you have a moral responsibility. You have a political responsibility. We answer to God for how we do politics. We answer to God with how we do politics. And every nation is accountable for their nation. They're accountable to God for how they do things there. And I've had the privilege of going into other countries and seeing how politics works. I'll give you, for instance, I remember going into Haiti one time during a political election. And, I forget, they had like 12, 13 people running for president, and it was absolute chaos. And they would spray paint their slogans on walls, and, I mean, it was just crazy. And watching all of that and seeing the chaos and then seeing the violence that took place from their elections, there's a political and a moral responsibility for that. remember being in Togo, Africa in 2008. And while we're in Togo, Africa, we were staying in a certain village in the or a certain city. It was a larger city in Togo. But the city we're in is where the president of the country was from. So when he would come to visit, they would shut everybody's power down so he would have enough power at his presidential palace. And when I say palace, it's not what you're thinking. Many people have homes here that are nicer than his presidential palace there. But they would shut everybody else's power down because now it's about the person. And that's not the way politics is supposed to be. As a political leader, you are morally responsible for not only you, but for everybody around you. But we've forgotten that. So you have a moral and a political responsibility in how you vote and what you promote. And I want to be careful to what I promote because I'm going to answer to God for that. And I want to be careful in how I vote. Now, I'm the kind of person that doesn't really tell you how I vote. Some of you don't mind doing that. I'll just be honest with you. I don't really communicate that to people. I don't tell people as a leader how to vote or who they should vote for. I don't really tell people who I voted for. I believe it's personal, and I just keep it that way. But you have a responsibility in how you vote and what you promote. All right, I've said that enough times, haven't I? The second thing is this, is that our goal as followers of Christ should be to see the gospel and our cultural society flourish, not just prosper. To see our cultural society and to see the gospel flourish and not just prosper. You're like, what's the difference? And I believe there is an incredible difference in the two. Let me deal with the other. So prospering means that we are just, when I use the word prosper, I'm thinking that we are adding on top of what we already have. We're just keeping on stacking it up. So we think of prosper sometimes in financial terms, and you can use it in financial terms, but I believe it's more than just financial. I believe we prosper in our health. I want to get healthier and healthier and healthier, and I understand that, but at the same time, when we talk about prospering, we're just kind of like building up wealth. What defines rich? What defines wealthy? What defines prosperous? So maybe somebody says that they have. I'm going to use terms. They have a. I'll give you this. I was looking up some candidates the other day that are running, and some of them presidential candidates, some of them Senate candidates. And I was looking up, and one of them was worth, I think it was like $143 million. Now, I know for many of us, that's a number that is just mind-blowing. But then another candidate was worth $1 billion. And so, $143 million, can you live on $143 million? I think you could retire pretty well on $143 million. Your average person could. And so, that's wealthy. And then but when we get to the point that we have that and we just have to keep building on it and building on it and building on it, that's what I'm talking about prospering in the sense of we're just trying to accumulate and we're just trying to become, you know, better and better and better on top of everything instead of just being understanding that what we have is a gift from God and living it that way. Flourishing has the idea of, not only am I'm not doing this just for me, I'm doing this to spread it. I'm not just piling it up. I am flourishing so that I can then fan out and I can use it. And it's the idea of I want to be able to do these things and have what I have, not just so I can gain it for self, so that I can bless others, so I can help others. And we want the gospel of Jesus Christ to flourish. Now, I'm going to say this. I believe that in the church in America, we've let the gospel become about prosperity in the sense that we keep giving it to the same group of people over and over and over again instead of letting it flourish and go to other people and spreading it out. And we need to do the same thing in our cultural society where we want to see people grow and flourish. And so as I approach politics, my approach to politics is how is this going to allow society at large to flourish, to grow, not just for one layer of people to grow. And the idea is not, once again, it's not a socialist idea where I'm going to take what somebody else has. No, but that we are becoming a society that is wanting to build and grow so that we can flourish and help other people. And you can't put a term with this. It is a biblical foundation, and it's not communistic, capitalistic, socialist, all these terms we try to put with it. It is just the responsibility that we have to, as Christians, to society, that we see people flourish and grow. Jesus took 12 people, as well as the others that followed him, because in Acts you see an upper room of 120 people. But he took those people and he poured into them, not so they could just build up wisdom and not build up knowledge, but so they could take that, because he knew they would need to allow that to spread. And that's exactly why 2,000 years later, the message of Jesus and the gospel of Jesus Christ is still going all throughout the world, because it is flourishing. And we need to see society flourish. So in politics, as I go back to the moral and political responsibility, I understand that I want to see society flourish, and therefore I want to see things like poverty, which is still, you talk about pandemic, which is still huge and growing. I want to see those things go away. The article I referenced earlier said that poverty remains unacceptably high despite $1 trillion annually in government spending on anti-poverty programs. Why? Because government can't answer that. Government can't answer and be the one that flourishes for the neighbor. It is us that has to flourish. And we put people in position and of power that help that flourishing, but we have that responsibility before people. So as followers of Christ, our goal should be to see our cultural society flourish. And one of the ways is realizing that there is, as the article says, a relational character of poverty. Among poor families with children, 71% are headed by a single parent. So therefore, we've got a home issue, which is dealing with, that was moving into poverty. So if a single parent home, if 71% of people in poverty are in a single parent home, then we have a home issue that we need to deal with, a marriage issue, a life issue. You see how it's bigger than just who I vote for, and it's bigger than just some new decision that's made by Congress or someone else. It is how we are dealing with it within our own everyday culture in the society in which we live. And so children in those households are more likely to repeat that cycle and become dependent on welfare, and then once again, we're back into the whole political system. So if we can make marriage work, and we can really strengthen marriage. One of these days, I want to have a friend of mine, Doug, on. Doug works with a group called Live the Life, and I definitely need to get a hold of him. And they deal with marriage because they understand this whole thing of marriage, that if you can make marriages flourish and you can make marriages grow and increase and become what they need to be and become strong, you're going to affect that. The article says that marriage reduces the probability of child poverty by 80%. Did you get that? Marriage reduces the probability of child poverty by 80%. And so we're going to have a dramatic effect when we start seeing that flourishing. So when I vote and the things that I promote in the political realm don't need to be about a candidate, it needs to be about principles. And I really believe the problem is we're not holding candidates accountable to principle. And I'm just determined. And maybe some of you are like, well, David, if I don't vote this or that, then I'm wasting my vote. No, I believe just the opposite. It's not about a single vote. It's about the principles behind that and the responsibility that I carry with that and what I'm promoting every day. And I believe we have too many voices that aren't being heard because they don't have an R or a D behind their name. We've condensed everything to a candidate or everything to a political party, and we have not condensed it down to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so my encouragement to you today is to look beyond candidate, look beyond party, and what is the foundation, what are the principles that you have that you're going to promote? Now, if you want to run for political office based on that, go for it. We need some people that run based on principle. But you need to live this out every day, and I need to live this out every day, to where we are taking our political positions that have a biblical foundation based on biblical principle and applying them powerfully into people's lives so that we flourish. So that we flourish. Can you imagine if we start living based on principle and see things like poverty and racism, which are, by the way, all tied together, fatherlessness. Man, we can name so many categories, and I won't get into it right now because we're here at the end. But just understand that we've got to have some better philosophy on this and how dramatic that will be. So what you vote, how you vote, sorry, and what you promote. They rhyme, so maybe you can remember that when you leave today. But I just want to give you that challenge today on your political positions. Make sure they have a biblical foundation. Make sure that they are for the flourishing of our society and for the flourishing of the gospel. Hey, God willing, next week I'm going to start sharing some things, and it's not going to be one episode. It's probably going to be a continuation episode if everything goes well. I would like to get somebody like Doug on here, and I want to actually, all week long I've been saying I want to add more guests to our lineup because I love interacting with people. And I believe you respond well when I interact. As a matter of fact, our top episodes are when I interact with people. So look forward to that. But I definitely want to share some things with you on that next week if we're able to do that. But until then, man, I hope you have a great day. But I hope you have a wonderful world. I hope everything is exactly as you hope and desire it to be, and that God brings about all of that for His glory. So God bless. Have a wonderful world.